Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Thorn and Cross Haunted Nights Live. We'd like to thank W.J. Pierce for creating and performing our music. I'm Alistair Cross, and I'm here with my co-host and collaborator, Tamara Thorne. Thank you for joining us. Before we get going tonight, I'm going to turn it over to Tamara, who's going to tell you what we're working on now.
Well, we're about to have our solos appear. Mine is about to go up for pre-sale, and yours is right behind it. Mine's called Brimstone, and it's a coming-of-age story that takes place in 1968. The Brimstone Grand Hotel, owned by reclusive movie star Delilah Devine, looms high on Hospital Hill, harboring long-buried family secrets that whisper of unimaginable horrors, horrors that will echo down through generations. Within the walls of the Brimstone Grand, the past has come back to life, and Holly Tremaine and her grandmother Delilah are faced with an ancient familial evil that rages just below the old hotel's serene facade, an evil that won't rest until it possesses Holly, body, mind, and soul. And Alistair's new release is The Silver Dagger, Book 2 in the Vampires of Crimson Cove series, and it picks up where the first book, Crimson Corset, leaves off. Life in Crimson Cove has been good to the Coulter brothers since Gretchen Van Treese was staked and her horde of vampires scattered. But when she rises from the grave, the brothers are torn apart, their lives and the peace between them shattered. Meanwhile, a serial killer is stalking the little mountain town, leaving a trail of blood that leads to a truth Sheriff Ethan Hunter doesn't want to face. The streets are no longer safe, nor are the forested paths. For a new and unknowable evil has come to Crimson Cove, and everyone, vampire and human alike, must come together in order to survive. Alistair.
All right. And that first book in the Crimson Cove series is The Crimson Corset, and that is available at Amazon.com. And if you are a vampire fan, you might also want to check out its companion novel, Darling Girls, which is a Thorn and Cross collaboration that features the vampires both of Crimson Cove and of Tamara's Candle Bay. All right. Again, very quickly, you're listening to Thorn and Cross Haunted Nights Live. You can learn more about what we do at our websites, alistaircross.com and tamarathorne.com. You can visit our mutual blog at thornandcross.wordpress.com, or if you tweet, our handles are at crossalistair and at tamarathorne. You can also visit our Haunted Nights Live page on Facebook. For more information on the show, you can visit Authors on the Air on Facebook, Twitter, and at authorsontheair.com. This is a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. All right, tonight we are doing something a little bit different. After a too long hiatus from the Ravencrest saga in order to wrap up our solo novels, we just finished the fourth installment, which is called Retribution. And tonight we are going to be interviewed by Q.L. Pierce, and we're going to be talking about Ravencrest and just what we do. So before we get going, let me tell you a little bit about our host tonight, Q.L. Pierce. Q, whose many accomplishments include, but are not limited to, being the author of the hit series Scary Stories for Sleepovers, Titan A.E., The Land Before Time, and over 150 other books for middle grade and young adult readers, has won the Carter G. Woodson Gold Medal, the Moonbeam Children's Book Award, and many others. Her multi-award-winning book, Red Bird Sings, received praise from Publishers Weekly, the School Library Journal, and the Library Media Connection. That said, it's all yours, Q.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm really happy to have this amazing duo to talk to tonight. So for those who don't know, Tamara Thorne's first novel was published in 1991. And since then, she's written many more, including international bestsellers Haunted, Bad Things, Moonfall, Eternity, and The Sorority. And as she mentioned, her new novel, Brimstone, will be out this spring. And Alistair Cross grew up on horror novels and scary movies. And by the age of 8, he began writing his own stories. His debut solo novel, The Crimson Corset, was an Amazon bestseller. And his new novel, The Silver Dagger, will be out soon. I can't get any more specific than that. That's all I know. In collaboration, Jordan Cross is currently writing several novels, including the next volume in the continuing Gothic series, the Ravencrest Saga Exorcism. And this is one of my favorites. So that's what I want to talk about. If you guys don't mind, I would like to talk about Ravencrest.
Okay.
You bet.
There have been, well, from the very beginning, this is the fourth segment, and there's been a huge arc for many of the characters, including the main character in Ravencrest. Now, I'm curious, did you map all of that out beforehand, or do you let the characters inform you as the saga progresses?
Well, we know some things about the characters, but yeah, take it away, Alistair.
I would say that it's, I wasn't even really aware of that. We talked about that a little bit. I think as the story progresses, it just kind of evolves naturally. I don't think you can really sit down and decide in what ways your character is going to change. Maybe some people do. I've never really thought of it that way. I think you just let them evolve as they naturally will.
Yeah, we do know a lot about Belinda, our main character, our governess, that we can't divulge, but it's nebulous, but we know more about her than we're letting on. But that's about it.
Has a character ever done anything that surprised you?
Every day.
Always.
Yeah,
that's part of what keeps it fun. We try not to get too meticulous about outlining. We basically want to know the beginning, the middle, the end, and have a few possible options for the end in case things change. But for the most part, we just kind of go wherever the muses take us, I guess.
Yeah, and the characters, they do take over.
Yeah, so we're constantly being surprised. I think I didn't expect, you know, Justine, for example, to be what she's become. I didn't expect Seth.
Mm-mm.
He's the stable boy in Ravencrest, and Justine's a maid. These are all people that, you know, at some point we come to a crossroads in the plot, and we think, you know, well, who are these people? Well, let's find out. We just start writing, and they tell us who they are, and before you know it, they've got a part in the plot.
And you have that with some of the ghosts as well that are haunting Ravencrest. Sometimes you focus on an individual one. Does that help you to decide what you're going to write about next?
Yeah. The ghosts tend to be central to every story in some way, or, you know, some sort of history. If it's not a ghost, it's something else. And that involves Belinda and the rest of the people in whatever mystery is going on that they have to solve. The current one, Exorcism, it's about a lot more than ghosts, but there's a ghost called the White Violet from the 1930s who was a silent scream star, and she's trying, Belinda can see ghosts and hear them, and they come to her, to Belinda, to try to get help, and so she's trying to tell her all sorts of things, and oh goodness, this is a toughie. The things that are going on right now.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I love the 30s setting that you fall back to. But anyway, Ravencrest, speaking of the ghosts and everything, it has a fully realized body of lore and history and mythology. Is that all fictional, or do you draw on other sources?
It's fictional, but of course we draw from lore and legends and all kinds of things, but we make them our own, and we make up most of it whole cloth. You know, it comes from the characters of, we have a whole, you know, family tree, and we now and then sit down and find out things about each character from the past, and that informs us what's going on with the terrible things that are going on at Ravencrest now. The thing about Ravencrest is it's like Las Vegas. If you die at Ravencrest, you stay at Ravencrest. So this place is loaded with, you know, history and ghosts that remember it.
Right, right. Okay, as the series continues, it's maturing into something darker and more deeply gothic than it was originally. Now, some of the supporting characters have fallen by the wayside, but Lieutenant Sasha Blankenball keeps reappearing. He's such an interesting character. How did he come to be, and why a crossdresser?
Well, let's see. We needed a detective, and sometimes when we're writing, we just kind of start goofing off on the page, you know, writing funny stuff to crack each other up, I guess. At one point, Sasha was sitting on a sofa, and one of us wrote, he straightened his skirt. And we realized he's a crossdresser. He's proud of a crossdresser. And that's fine. And we talked about it a little bit and decided, all right, we're not going to make this into a big thing. We're just going to have him be who he is, and people are going to accept him the way that he is. And I guess that was our statement, our political statement for Ravencrest, you know.
I love that about the character. It's just so cool that he is who he is, and he is a serious police officer and gets the job done. And he's such a wonderful character.
He works with a lot of gruff cop types, but he's good at his job. Mm-hmm. So, you know, nobody would dare give him a bad time about it.
No, what defined him for me, his personality, was in the Witches of Ravencrest. There's a big costume ball, and he and his wife came as Victor Victoria. And I love that.
I remember that. Yeah, that's great. How long is the series? Do you know how it's going to resolve, or how many more books we will see in the series, or are you keeping that secret for now?
We have no idea. We have lots more ghosts and things to explore, but we know some things about the end when it finally comes that are cool, but we don't know when, do we, Alistair? Do we know anything?
I think if the amount of ghosts and plots and storylines that we, if any of that is any indication, I think it'll go on for quite a while. But the thing about the Ravencrest saga is it's probably the most raw out of all of the books that we write, the least, it's the least planned. We have a lot of fun with it. And ironically, it's also our bestseller, which I think says something. We don't really spend a lot of time, you know, figuring out all the little details of where everything's going to go and what's going to happen. But we do know what needs to happen at the end for this whole story arc to be complete. But yeah. I would say for the most part, we just pretty much plan to write it until we get bored, which I don't think will happen anytime soon, to be honest.
Yeah, we didn't really want to do a series, but we thought we should. So we chose something that gave us endless opportunities to explore all kinds of things. So it would never get boring.
I think it's great that you're not limited to the location of Ravencrest, like when you did the Christmas story.
Oh, yeah.
That took place in
the
London.
Novella?
Yes. And that really does, you know, sometimes that informs some of the things that are going on now. So it's interesting to get that back history. Now, one of my favorite characters in the book is the butler, Grant. Now, he's more than he seems, and his husband, Riley, is more than human, but we don't really know. I mean, you've given us a little bit, but are we going to find out about their origins?
Oh, sure. Grant isn't as much of a secret. He's from England. He was a boyhood friend of Eric Manning, our millionaire, billionaire, I guess, at this point, given inflation, hero, and our dark brooding, you know, lord of the manor. And he is far more than a butler. He is a knight of the Mandrake. Is that what we call it, Alistair?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he knows all kinds of arcane things, and there's always been a knight with the Mannings because they get involved in these things. But Riley, he's really interesting. Belinda's caught on a little bit that something's going on there, and Grant has told her just a tiny bit that he's more than human. But we'll eventually explore that.
He seems to have kind of a green man thing going on. But I don't dare to second guess.
Could
guy,
be.
He's so, a nature kind of guy. Yeah.
I know you're not religious, but more than once, good priests have become important characters in your books. And in Ravencrest, Father Antonio is such an amazing character as he questions his faith and yet stands up to some pretty harsh treatment. So what is it about the priests that you are attracted to as a character?
Well, there's a few reasons for it. It's one of those things where mm-hmm. our sensibilities just kind of align on that topic. I think first and foremost, it's unexpected because priests have kind of gotten a bad rap in the horror genre because, I don't know, it's just...
As in life,
you see a priest and you think horrible things or, you know... and the thing is that's obviously not true. There's obviously a lot of good priests out there, and so we kind of want to balance the scales by creating good priests. And it's funny how many mm-hmm. priests we do have. We do use priests quite a bit. I think both of us in our solos and collaborations generally
we do
like good priests. So it's funny, but I think that's why. Also, I think there's something romantic about it. There's something they possess. Allegedly possess otherworldly knowledge, which comes in handy for the kind of stuff that we write. And also at the core of most of what we write, you've got the basic good versus evil, and priests are, mm-hmm. you know, a good power to have on, you know, the side of the good guys, I guess.
Yeah, and our non-religious characters will admit that, you know, it doesn't matter if you're Catholic or whatever, if the priest is good enough that he believes fully in what he's doing, likely it's going to work. And then Alistair and I kind of think that's true.
Yeah, I was very surprised in the last book when Cordelia asked to have Ravencrest blessed. By the priest.
Oh, that's this book. And, yeah. Oh, the last episode of this.
Oh, it's the beginning of
Oh,
I
yeah.
see.
Yeah.
Well, that was a surprise to me.
Us too. It was a surprise to everybody.
it was a surprise, and she's probably one of the most interesting characters to me, I think, because of little things like that. She will have, I don't know, you kind of think she's one way, and this is, you know, as someone,
and she's a witch. You know, we don't make a secret of that, and not a knife.
Right, right. But she's, but her personality. I mean, even as someone who, she's gonna zag and turning left when you think she's gonna turn right. I think she's interesting. I like her. I mean, she's
is, and she had a really good reason for doing what she did, and it was a very self-serving and good reason, which you'll understand as you read the book.
Right.
Yeah, I love that too.
Well, Ravencrest, in all of your books, and for both of you, I've noticed that the locale is so important. It's a character in itself. So when you're writing, when you first come up with that first little seed of a story, what pops into your head first? The plot, the character, the location? Do you see something? How does that work? Alistair?
Well, I think it depends on the story. If the location is a big enough part of the plot, you know, that might come first. Generally speaking, for me, it's the characters first, and then the story. But
usually,
location can be really important, and it can also be a lot of fun. going back to the, you know, years ago when I was, before I ever met Tamara, but I was reading her books, one of the things that I really admired about her writing was her grasp of setting. She's really strong with setting, and so a lot of times that's her. But I love that. It's not something that I think about doing though. I don't know if I've ever really thought I need to do the setting and then I'll build the story around that. I think it's always first and foremost about the characters.
In Mother, which is set in a perfect suburban, a little neighbor on a cul-de-sac, the setting becomes very important, even though it's very ordinary in a way, because there's something, it's not Stepford Wives, but it's that kind of, it seems that perfect. And then you get to see the seedy underbelly and, you know, all that stuff. And that becomes important there, even though it's really totally character-driven. But Ravencrest, yeah, we spent a lot of time on location for that. Well, the house itself. And we set things on the California coast all the time because it's a pretty place. We like it there. But, yeah, it's important. But, like, we've just started a new collaboration. And that started from one line when I texted Alistair, hey, we should do this. And that's total plot at that point. But now it's total character. And you got to read it, so
yeah.
You know. You were the one who said it's nothing but character. Yeah.
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 So when you're doing, talking about location again, I know you just come off a road trip.
Yeah.
And you were visiting, in essence, you were visiting your fictional places because they were modeled on places that actually exist, some of them in some ways. So how does it feel to go there and, like, okay, this is Eternity or this is Ravencrest, you know? Or, I mean, can you see your characters in your head when you're there? Or?
Like, Alistair had never seen the pool at Hearst Castle, which we basically renamed and put and changed a little, but put it, that's Ravencrest Indoor Pool. And he'd never seen that before, so it was in person. So he finally got to feel the atmosphere of that place. I think that was pretty cool, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And like going to, we pretty much saw everywhere that we've set books, and some we've seen before, some we haven't. But I know for me, I'd never been exactly to where I set the Crimson Cove books, where Crimson Cove would be. I've never been exactly there, but I knew where it was. And when we went and saw it, it really was quite surreal, I guess, because it is exactly how I pictured it. And it was interesting because while we were there, we talked to people and it gave me new ideas and implanted new characters. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think it's important to go to these places.
When you're,
it's really cool.
When you were walking at night where that Crimson Corset was set, did you ever have a little creepy kind of feeling that there might be vampires?
When we were driving down, at one point we were driving down this really windy kind of mountainous on our way back, and everybody was driving so fast. It's apparently the locals there are very used to it. So it's like this really windy road.
Oh.
Even if it's like 50, and that feels really, really fast when you're winding and going downhill. So we had people, you know, coming up behind us. And anyway, the point is we were going faster than I wanted to go. And at one point I remember thinking I could see Gretchen Van Treese popping out in the middle of the road and just, that would just be horrifying. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's
I remember
kind of
you
stuff
saying
I think
that.
About.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were saying that. And that side of the mountain, and it's okay, it's the Santa Cruz Mountains, and we were coming down the backside, the ocean side, toward to go to the boardwalk and in Santa Cruz. But the trees on that side of the mountain up high were kind of creepy and twisted. And a little bit of fog.
Yeah.
And yeah, Gretchen belonged there. So it had a huge amount of atmosphere. And I wish those cars
I could totally see vampires hanging out there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That was great.
So, Tamara,
it had the vibe.
Everybody up.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Tamara, you and Alistair have been writing together for 6 years now. While you're working together, do you think that you've influenced each other's writing?
Probably. We're so similar that it's hard to say. But now and then we can pick out stuff. We don't remember who wrote what most of the time. And now and then we can pick things out. And I think you, as our first reader, can probably tell us apart better than anybody. Alistair's likely to be a little sexier.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. And you put things in there that wake me right up.
we put things in to amuse you, too. Yeah.
Right.
That's one of our joys.
I'd say that in general, Tamara tends to do more atmosphere setting stuff, and I tend to do more gory, hardcore, or sexual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we both do a fair amount of both, so it's hard
we
to
do.
Say.
Yeah.
But I do think we bounce off each other enough and work together long enough that I think it would be impossible for us not to have influenced each other. But that's not to me.
Yeah, me too. It's not. One day you said to me, Alistair, oh Lord, my brain just farted. You said something. You know what? I don't remember what I was going to say. You should finish my sentence. You usually can.
One time there was. Yeah.
He doesn't know. It really flew out the window.
I have no idea. I have no idea where that was going.
We're already at the end of the time, so that's probably a good thing. I just want to know what's up next. I know you've got a couple of solos coming out, but are you planning on the next pair of solos? What's coming out?
We are in the middle of doing a lot right now because this is the first time. This is why we took the road trip, the vacation, because for the first time
we needed it.
In a long time, everything kind of lined up. We finished our solos at the same time, and so now we're at the beginning of a lot of things. Of course, Ravencrest is continuing. That's always ongoing, but now we are the Silver Dagger and Brimstone are done, and they're in production.
Mm-hmm.
So we are. So Tamara is working on her next solo novel. I'm starting my
next
solo
theory.
Novel.
Yeah.
And
now your next solo is more vampires. I'm taking Sheriff Tully from Eternity and giving him his own new sheriffship in a Southern California or a Northern California town. And and then we have our new collaboration, and then we have one that we've already written a quarter of that we have to go back to. And what else? Yeah, it's
That's
busy.
About
Everything
it, I think,
is
I
just
hope.
In the start. It's crazy right now.
I appreciate you letting me ask you all the questions about it, and I have had the privilege to read this volume of Ravencrest, and it's just getting better and better. I just love it. So, but I'm a huge gothic fan, so it's right up my alley. So I thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks.
We thank you.
Yes. And thank you for interviewing us. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Yeah. So I'll turn it over to you now, Alistair.
All right. So I will just say very quickly in closing, again, you can look for Tamara's novel Brimstone. It should be out in probably a couple of weeks. I'm really pretty confident saying that. Mine is The Silver Dagger. That one will be out shortly after that. Got to be a little bit vague about that because I don't know all these things. But they're on their way, and they'll be out soon. And you can probably... the best way to keep up is to sign up on our newsletter, which you can do by visiting either one of our websites, which is alistaircross.com or tamarathorn.com, and that's about it. And otherwise, thank you everybody for listening. And until next week, we wish you haunted nights,
sweet screams,
and be sure to check under the bed before you turn off the light.
Good night.
Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.